Welcome back, Crusaders, to the Nerd Crusade Podcast. This is episode 62, and I'm your host, Ian. With me is Courtney.
Hello.
Yeah, I was waiting for you to kind of, you know, introduce yourself there, but...
No, you're trying to do something new, and I'm not prepared.
I wasn't trying to do something new, but okay.
Yeah, you were.
All right, so this week we're going to be talking about some TV shows. We're going to wrap up, we're going to continue talking about Shogun, wrap up Three Body Promises. We've watched all of that. We have a movie to talk about, which is Godzilla X Kong, The New Empire. And then we'll give you some more of our first impressions on Dragon's Dogma. Courtney's played a little bit this time, and I've actually...
I have not played any more of it.
You've played a little bit of it. More than you did last time we talked about it, I think.
No.
I don't think you had played it last time when we talked.
But I haven't played any more.
Well, you saw the ending when I played it.
So. Yes.
We'll talk a little bit about that. We'll give you spoilers warnings when that comes up. But yeah. So we'll jump right in to Shogun. We watched episode 6 called Ladies of the Willow World.
Yes.
This is kind of more of a background on the heir's mother and, like, kind of what her...
Lady Ochiba.
Yeah, what Lady Ochiba's whole issue is with Torinaga and...
Mariko.
Mariko and all them. And, like, this weird kind of sequence, but it was filmed really, really interesting where he's... At the, I don't know what you call it, I guess the brothel, but it's not called a brothel.
It's a tea house, but for men only.
Yeah, which is what the Willow World is.
Yes.
But they did this interesting scene, because it's like, everybody seems to know that Makio and Blackthorn have hooked up or something.
Yeah, or there's something going on. There's a little sexual tension going on there.
And even when the Courtesan was talking about, like, how the world, this whole thing is supposed to be, like, an escape for you, to, like, escape your, whatever it is you're stressed out with life or whatnot, they did a unique thing where, like, she decided to step behind Makio.
Yeah.
And, like, disappear behind
Which
Makio.
Was so smart, so it made it look like it was all Makio's,
yeah,
like, explaining all this. And yeah. Makio was kind of getting off
Well, like, everything she was saying applied both to him and her.
Yeah.
And it was very interesting and shot very well. And it kind of, like, shows the art of, like, a geisha where it's not, like, they're not geisha yet,
because geisha aren't around at this time. This is, like, a precursor to the geisha.
But the concept of, like, the misnomer for geisha is a lot of people think, like, that's the Japanese prostitute. Like, they're not prostitutes.
They're entertainers.
They're entertainers. And, like, this was... And even though this was a courtesan who was kind of, like, was referred to as a prostitute and how Blackthorn explained it, like, we don't know if they actually did anything that night because they don't show anything happening. But, like, the experience she was giving them was... more than just, hey, I'm here to be a whore.
Yeah.
It was something much more deeper and emotional for both of them. And it was shot in a way to like, it showed... It was
really beautifully
shot. Showed, like, how this is not what you think it is. It's something very much different.
Yes. And she was also helping bringing forth all their emotions.
Yeah.
Through what she has briefly seen between the interaction of the two of them.
Yeah, so, it was done really nice, and, like, I would say, if you haven't watched this episode, or you have watched it, check out again, watch it again, check out that scene where, like, she literally just disappears behind Makio. But, like I said, that's probably the most beautiful sequence shot in this, as, like, the feelings for what Makio and Blackthorn have for each other kind of come more to the surface, and it's very obvious that everybody in their vicinity knows something's up. Even Torinaga, because, like,
Torinaga, 100%. He saw that shit in the last episode.
I think he saw it, like, way earlier, like, when they first met or something, because he immediately, like, told her husband, like, just divorce your wife if you're going to be an asshole.
Yeah. It's like you're not going to hit her. You're not going to do any of this. You're moving out of the house. You're on probation
right now. Yeah, and he kind of says, like, you won't divorce her or whatnot, but, like, Torinaga, like, basically gives him permission to do so.
Yeah.
And then he also forces Maki, like, you have to go to the Coruscant house with him. Like, and tell me if he talks while he pillows.
Yeah. Which is like talking to sleep
type. Like talking to sleep type of thing or that type of stuff. And it's like, do you expect her to sleep with him or like you expect her to just like watch?
Or like, you know, the doors are pretty much wooden paper. Yeah. So like just kind of listen in. It's like,
weird. Yeah, it's really interesting. And like after the whole sequence of Makio and them, like Makio leaves and the Coruscant has to like be alone with Blackthorn. And then like it just cuts to the next morning. where he's gracious for like the visit and whatnot, but it doesn't seem like I don't know if they did anything. Honestly, I feel like it's kind of how the sequence is in Cyberpunk when you go to the clouds.
Oh yeah, and where you're just talking with the with the doll,
and like she tells you all this deeper inside stuff like that's about you, and like you have this like existential moment, and then it's like, okay, I'm done.
Yeah,
we didn't sit there and have sex, but like I got something out of that, and then you go on with your business.
Yeah,
That's what it seemed like might have happened, but who knows? Because the whole thing is like Blackthorn is still telling Torinaga, like, I want to go home. I want to leave. I'm done with this.
Yeah, and Torinaga is just trying to shower him in gifts.
Yeah, gives him land, gives him a stipend of like a profit that he's going to get. And it's like he doesn't care about any of that. He just wants to leave.
Yeah.
And he has a hard, and every time he tries to bring it up, it's like, are you unhappy with the gifts he's giving you? It's like, no, I appreciate the ship. It's like, this isn't what I fucking want.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to stay here. I want to leave.
Yeah. So I thought that was a really great sequence, and also the sequence of the play that Lady Ochiba attends when they're trying to figure out who to replace Torinaga on the council.
Yeah, they basically pick like the actor
from that play, because the play was done by all high nobles, and it's.
It's a depiction of her father's death, I thought, right?
Yeah, it's a depiction of her life story.
Yeah.
And it's cool seeing it cut between the play and what actually happened. So you get kind of her angle on everything as well.
And even though, like, she understands it was Maki's father who killed her father, she believes Torinaga planned it.
Yeah.
Where in reality, we don't know if that's true or not. We feel like it kind of...
That hasn't come out yet.
Yeah, it kind of presented more like... Her father was upset and wanted to do something. Torinaga was kind of like, calm down. Or Torinaga was following his lead and not Torinaga was planning on killing the Lord to begin with. But that also gives us an idea of like almost her craziness too, because like she was showered upon for the fact that she's the only one ever to give.
Yeah, she was the only courtesan to give to produce a male heir.
Yeah. And it's because, and like when she starts like, going into all the horrors that she had to endure, which she doesn't tell us exactly what, she just says she had to endure so much to do that, and only she could do it.
She's raped to get a kid, because she doesn't truly want to have sex with the
old man. But it wasn't just that. Like, she was given toxins to drink and a bunch of other stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it wasn't just, oh, you're drugged and you're getting raped. It's the combination of all that. But like you also kind of see how crazy she is, because then when she does produce an heir, she thinks that she's almost blessed by the gods or something. Like, she's almost a deity for being able to do the impossible.
Yeah, because they bestow upon her all this wealth and honor for producing an heir.
Yeah, to the point where she's going to control the council.
She's controlling the council now. You see that 100%.
But
she goes, we're going to get this actor. You're going to do it, pal.
Yeah, and you can see that she is afraid of her.
Oh, yeah. Everybody's afraid of her.
Which is really interesting, because like how Japanese culture is presented, you would think it's almost... Some people would mistake it almost like maybe Middle Eastern culture, where like women don't have a say in anything. Mm-hmm. But they depict it all throughout this series that like assassins are women.
Yeah.
And that, like, hey, the women here do have a lot of power and what they can do and what they control.
It's all in the background, yeah. Though. They move in the shadows.
Yeah, it's all in the background, yeah, for sure. And that's, like, what is the misconception. And we're seeing, like, no, the heir's mother is controlling everything. The council is literally afraid of her. And, like, we get the sense that, like, she's semi-psychotic and has a lust for revenge.
Yes.
Which Maki also has kind of this lust for revenge to avenge her father, but is refused to do it from her husband. Mm-hmm. That's kind of one of the reasons why he won't divorce her, because he won't let her go so she can go kill herself.
Yeah.
In trying to get her revenge. So it's like all these intricate, like, cultural things that are happening. But like you said, like, all the power the women have, like, they have a lot of it, but it's always in the background and it's never seen up front.
Yeah.
So people mistaken them for being very timid or weak or whatnot. And like, all the women here have been very strong.
Oh, yeah, they move in the shadows.
Because even, like, Fuji's like fucking strong.
Fuji like moves in the shadows so well. I just love it whenever she's in a scene and you see her like sip tea, like, ooh, what's going on here?
Yeah.
I'm like, ooh, Fuji's like my favorite in this show. And also another big thing that's happened in this show is when they're talking about war plans, since most of their forces have been wiped out due to the
landslide.
What their next steps are, and they're trying to force Toranaga to do the Crimson Tide, which was something they talked about a long time ago, which was a direct assault on Osaka Castle.
Yeah, which seems, I guess, I wonder what the name of Crimson Tide is. Just like a wave of just bodies and blood being thrown at a fortress that they may not be able to penetrate.
But they have the cannon regiment now.
Yeah, and I think Crimson Tide is also some type of plan that they had that we haven't seen the details of yet.
Yep.
So we have to see what that will be. But it's very interesting.
Yep. And at the very end of this episode, Toranaga relents and agrees that we're going to do the Crimson Tide.
Yeah, so we'll find out next episode what exactly that's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
Or the next coming episodes. But
oh, so, and also one of the other people on the council get killed too.
Yeah,
because
there was a regent that rejected the actor's nomination,
mm-hmm.
and said, and like came up saying like, this is bullshit, you're being manipulated, and they fucking wiped him out, obviously.
Yeah,
he was trying to flee, but it was like too little too late, and was basically killed.
Yeah, so we're just down to three guys.
Yeah, so like there's no choice but war happening at this point. Like, they're all desperate to kill Toranaga, who honestly didn't pose a threat to begin with.
Yeah.
And this all stems from the heir's mother wanting revenge for her father's death, which she blames Toranaga for.
Mm-hmm.
Which, whether or not he's responsible,
I don't know.
I like, even if he did plan, I feel like he's not the one who killed her father. Like, that guy did, he was killed for it, and his whole family was basically murdered. He married off. Makio finds out from Toranaga this episode that she was married off, not because her dad didn't love her or like her or want to get rid of her. It was to protect her.
Because she was the best of them.
And wanted her to like get revenge and come back to take back their legacy.
Yeah.
And like,
because we also see in the flashback, she was practicing fighting. I forget what the...
It was the long spear, the spears with the long blade on the end.
I forgot,
I don't know what that weapon's called, but it's not necessarily a spear, but like she was practicing fighting with that.
I wonder if that's going to come into play, which I would think it would, because there's no
coincidences
with this show.
It definitely shows that like, hey, she's trained in martial arts and she knows how to fight if she needs to.
Yeah.
But like, it was like she had a realization that that's why she was allowed. The whole time she is angry at her father for sending her away and then she not being able to get revenge or whatnot. So it'd be interesting to see how we move forward here. I mean, there's only, four more episodes?
Yes, because there's only 10 episodes long.
Yep.
So we'll just have to see.
But looks really good. It is very good. You guys should definitely be watching if you're not watching it. Definitely enjoy it. And like,
visuals are great.
Visuals and how especially the last episode was shot was done really well. Like, so
mm-hmm.
One might call this episode a little bit of filler with like, especially the stuff at the tea house. But the tea house scene was shot really well and showed a lot more of kind of the culture and like,
yes,
building a relationship between Makio and Blackthorn a lot more.
Yes. It also gives a lot of backstory to Lei Ochiba, who really only appears in the last episode.
Yeah. So, and then that's the unique thing, because like most shows, when you do filler, it's like, okay, this is filler. It's kind of shot boring, and it's just like, and you obviously feel like this isn't moving any plot forward. This is just
to
fill time.
Plot.
Right, like, this is moving plot, but also the stuff that somebody might mistake as filler is like just shot so beautifully, it's entertaining to watch.
Yes.
Whereas other stuff, which is usually like exposition dumps on things that, hey, you the viewer already know, and they're just having to explain it to some character that doesn't know it.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay, this is 15-minute diatribe of everything that's happened. Yes, we know. We don't need to see you tell the character all this shit.
Yeah.
This was very interesting for us to get filled in on, and very beautiful to watch. Now, moving on, we talked a little bit about the three-body problem last time.
Because we only watched the first three episodes.
This time we have finished watching it.
So what are your thoughts?
Total of 8 episodes. You finished the book. I have
not finished the first 2 books. I'm working my way through the 3rd.
I thought, as for a TV show, not having read the entirety of the first book, the changes they made, like we said last time, were kind of interesting, kind of weird. But the story still plays out really well. Episode 5 is probably the best episode in it.
Yes.
Because it's like everybody's showing their cards at that by the end of that episode.
I thought the show should have ended at that episode. Because it would have left it at a great cliffhanger and like, oh shit, what do we do? And would have really emphasized that horror and dread like you would if you read the book.
Yeah, and the thing is like...
And it doesn't do that at the very end of this season.
Yeah, and then it opens up a lot more questions and stuff. Where it ends here just ends on questions, but like where it would end if you ended on episode 5 would be like, okay, the invaders have revealed themselves to Earth, and we see their power that they have, and they're calling people bugs.
Yes, you are bugs.
And so, like, the next few episodes, like, people are going through the existential dread of, like, I'm not a bug, we're not bugs, or, hey, bugs don't know why bad things happen to them because we're so advanced and we're... Like, the comparison of it keeps getting talked back and forth to a point where I believe Saul says, like, hey, you know, bug doesn't know why bad things happen to him. It could be pesticides, it could be extermination, it could be a shitty kid stomping on an ant farm. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing they can do about it. And having a society saying that we're that to them is very terrifying, I can see, when you definitely think about it that way. But I do like how it ends by episode 8, where he ends up showing them, hey, look, all the fucking bugs. We do all this shit to exterminate them, and they're not going anywhere.
Yeah.
They're fucking here to stay. So, like, yeah, we're bugs. They won't be able to get rid of us. Mm-hmm. Which was a nice note to kind of end it on.
Yeah. But
episode 8 has so many questions that come up that don't get explained.
Yes.
And that's what, I guess, the guessing game in the sci-fi, which is pretty interesting, is that how do we fight this enemy that can see and hear everything we do, no matter where we are, because our whole planet is engulfed by this quantum entanglement
particles
that they're able to basically spy on us, like the ultimate spy. And then they show us one idea, which is a staircase, and where they're going to send a human brain to the Trisolarian so that they can rebuild the body. And
but that's not what they're called in the show.
Yeah, they're called the Sanshi, which I think, or
yes,
the Sanshi, which they, apparently that's what the actual Chinese translation was closer to. Transalorians, the Western translation in the book, but if you look it up on the internet, most people will refer to it as Transalorians.
Trisolarians,
yeah. But like, after episode 5, it's mainly like kind of some filler stuff with this love story that we don't care about.
Well, especially episode 6. It's kind of like, eh,
yeah, but whatever. But that's all just to lead to the guy dying of cancer is going to basically give his brain over to this project to send him to the aliens. And so they can meet him and he can spy on them somehow, which we have no idea how he would or even if he would. But that whole plan kind of falls apart.
Yeah, because it... Because one little thing goes wrong, and he goes off course.
Yeah, and basically, it was an interesting plan to like project him up to the speed, 1% light speed, with modern technology, which is basically like using a shockwave of nuclear explosions in space to basically staircase him up to speed.
They can intercept.
And they use the nanofibers that the other gal made to build the sail for it to catch the shockwave.
Yeah.
But, like, part of the sail breaks. And the question that comes up in your mind, which they never answer, is, like, so is that human error and engineering? Or was that something the Trisolarians did with them developing it to fuck up a minor calculation or something that it didn't get put together correctly? Or is it just, like, hey, we have to keep trying again or whatnot?
Mm-hmm.
But basically, they build this whole thing up. It fails. It's just, like... Oh, well, his brain's just floating off into space.
All right.
Can't do anything about that.
Bye.
Let's go to our next plan, which ends up being called a wall facer.
The wall facer project.
Yeah.
Which is set up by the UN.
Yeah, and which involves Saul.
Yeah. And this episode 8, it's beat for beat like in the book, in the second book, when they're introducing the Wall Facers in the UN.
And, like, basically, Saul, you're taking it through his eyes, which is basically he just wakes up one day.
After a one-night stand.
And there's a car accident that basically kills the girl, like, he was with, that, like, standing right next to him. To where it basically looks like, by happenstance, it barely missed him. Mm-hmm. To where, like, was he being targeted? To then, okay, cool, I'm going to... Clarence is now going to go and protect him. And then, like, they start dragging him all over the... basically from London to New York and not telling him anything, make him wear a bulletproof outfit.
Yep.
And then he's sitting in the UN, and that's when they announce, yes, we're having a new plan where they... We're
introducing the Wall Facers.
Yeah, our enemy can't... Our enemy can see and hear everything we do, but they don't know what's happening in our mind. So the Wall Facers are going to be these people who have... unlimited authority and unlimited resources, as long as it doesn't violate any, like, international treaties. It was, like, the only stipulation. Mm-hmm. But they won't tell anybody what they're doing. Nobody, they don't have to explain anything that they're doing. And they're going to, until they execute their plan that will help us defeat them. And then it's like, okay, you just painted a giant target on all these people. And Saul's like, nobody told him what the hell was going on until that moment. And he's like, I don't want this. And he constantly keeps saying, like, I refuse this position. Does everybody know I refused? And they're like, yes, everybody knows you refused it. But they're all going to take his orders anyway.
Yeah, they're all still going to follow him.
He's a wall facer now. And because anything he says, he doesn't have to explain himself. He's just that role.
Yep.
Which, honestly, from his point of view and in your point of view watching this, you're like... So they just said that you're in charge of some plan to destroy, to help us fight the aliens, but yet we can't tell you why we picked you, and we don't know, and you're not going to tell us what your plan is. Mm-hmm. And he has no idea where to even begin, because he's like, what the fuck?
Yep.
The only thing we know for sure is that because Dr. Yan talked to him before she went to China and basically ended her life.
Yeah.
And she told him a... weird joke that made no sense, which was basically a joke about Einstein going to heaven, wanting to play the violin, but the angels told him, like, no, God's a sax player. Then he hears God playing the sax, and he joins on the violin, and God comes down, kicks him in the balls, and just smashes his violin. And the punchline of the joke is, don't play with God. And then she tells him, like, jokes are a personal thing. Sometimes people get it, sometimes they don't. And it's like, it was very clear that it was a coded message to him.
Yes.
That he has no idea what the fuck it is, because Saul's kind of an underachieving idiot.
Yeah.
He may have figured it out, because he says he has an idea why they picked him, but he doesn't tell us what it is.
I know why, because I read the book.
Yeah, you read the book. But I'm assuming that he's understanding that it's because that he had the talk with the doctor before she died. But, like, we have no idea why. And then, maybe not. And then the episode ends. Like I said, it ends when the
series ends.
The series ends. Is like, well, what the hell's the Wall Facer program? Is this, like, a decoy thing to keep their eyes on these three people that they picked to save the world? Or is it or are these people actually going to come up with a feasible plan? Because it's like a general... was she a warmonger?
They call her a warmonger in this show.
Yeah, and then him being a physicist researcher. He's, like, not even a high-level physicist doctor or scientist. He's just a researcher.
Yes.
And I think the only reason he's really there is because clearly he's a threat, but we don't know why he's a threat. He doesn't even know why he's a threat. And they're using this as a decoy, because... the staircase program failed, which was one idea. And, like, all you can do here is just keep throwing random ideas out there repeatedly until something works. Like,
that's an interesting theory, Ian.
It'll be interesting to see. I hope this series gets greenlit for season 2, because...
Well, how they left it, it kind of...
has to, because, like, it leaves off with, like, so many questions. Like, leaving off at episode 5 would have been better, because... Yeah. Yeah, you have questions on what's going to happen next, but you're not like, well, we have no idea what our plan... We had plans and they failed. We have a new plan. We don't know what. Because episode 5 ends with them revealing themselves to the world and, like, scaring the shit out of the entire world by putting a giant eye in the sky saying, we're watching you. if you ended there with them saying, yeah, we're going to make sure you understand you need to fear us.
It gives you that dread.
Yeah.
It gives you all the feels you get from the book. It would have been so much better, so much juicier. But no, they expanded it out for another 3 episodes.
Or yeah, and the thing is, those two, episodes 6 and 7, were mostly like, this character's an asshole. This character's an asshole. Why is she bitching
this
about it?
This is useless. This is useless.
Yeah. Like this love story about how he can't profess his love to Jin and buys her a $19.5 million star before he dies. It's like, whoop de fucking do. Okay. You helped fund the war effort with your stupid purchase.
Good on you, bud.
You sacrifice your brain for this project, which ultimately failed, and now you're just floating out in space. Will they come back to that in the future? Maybe, who knows? Will the Trisolorians like detour to go pick him up? Who knows? It sounds like they wouldn't, because when the plan fails, they reveal themselves to the head honcho dude and basically say, yeah, we wanted to meet him too, but sorry, we're not going to. By the way, we're going to watch you, and we hope your cryogenic thing works so you can freeze yourself. We can actually really meet you. Oh, yeah, by the way, we'll see you when you die. And they show him a vision of like a zombie version of himself.
Yeah.
Which makes you start thinking, like, okay, here's an enemy that can see, that can manipulate everything you see and hear, but they technically can't physically do anything to you. So, is there a way to overcome that? And then, all right, how do you fight something like that? Which is why I think like they're just throwing shit at the wall, because the one thing we have over them is that we can lie, and they don't understand the concept of lying other than it's distrustful.
Yeah.
So what's our one thing humanity can do better than anything else in the universe, as far as we know?
Lie.
Tell stories.
Yeah.
So if you have an enemy that's watching everything we do, put on a show for them to be distracted while you're trying to do something behind the scenes as much as possible without telling anybody, with the wall facer program of people just coming up.
That's an interesting theory there, Ian.
That's the only thing I would think to do. But like, again, the whole wall facer thing, we have no idea how that works. Just like sending Will's brain to them for them to rebuild his human body and like recreate human.
In hopes that A, they catch him. B, they
rebuild him. To if he collects information, how is he going to send it back to us?
Yeah.
Like, it seemed like
it's a big bunch of ifs.
It seemed like a plan with like so many holes in it that it's not worth investing in. But if you're doing a distraction, it's worth spending all the resources on doing that so that they're focused on that while something else is cooking in the background. And all I can think of is that this organization who's working to fight what's in the book called the ETO, who are the humans who are trying to help the aliens, plus devise a way to fight the aliens. That's all you can do is just diversion, I would think.
Yeah. Theories.
No.
Theories upon theories there.
Well, that's all I got. But I mean, that's why the show's good, because it's developing theories that, like, you'll get to see what they come up with, how interesting it will be.
Mm-hmm.
I like one thing that I heard on Bernie's podcast, which was that he was saying, like, there was a point where science fiction all became mystery.
Yes.
And it's all about solving the mystery, where here we note that they reveal to the world the mystery that we already know, which is aliens are coming.
Mm-hmm.
And now the mystery is, how are we solving the problem? But it's not for you, the viewer, to figure it out before they come up with it, because they're going to come up with something completely off the wall.
Yep, that's what happens in the books.
Because it's even
all off the wall, and you're like, wait, what?
Because even like with the reveal of the cephons, the quantum entanglement particles or supercomputers that they make, like as soon as they said what it was, like, oh yeah, of course, quantum entanglement. Those you can have instant communication that way. Should have thought of that, but completely didn't. They came with like, oh, okay, cool. But completely forgot about that.
Yeah.
And then when you bring quantum physics into it, that completely brings in so many variables that it's impossible to understand what's going to happen. Like, quantum physics is like almost based off of perception of reality and not actual science.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you work when somebody can work with quantum physics or manipulate quantum physics that way?
Yeah.
So it'd be interesting to see what goes down.
If they are able to make a season 2.
Yeah, and see where they go with it. Because, again, like, the books go, like, go hundreds and hundreds of years in the future, to the point where, like, there's live ships with humanity on it floating in space and fighting the Trisolorians there. And, like, it goes on and on to where I don't think they'll go that far with a TV show, perhaps. But maybe they will. Who knows?
Oh, I mean, they kind of have to if they're following the books, which they rearrange the books because each book does jump around in timelines. And here it looks like they organize to get kind of more of a streamline to better explain and everything like that. This series, I do want to see where they're going. Do I prefer it over the book? No. But is it watchable and good? Yeah, I think it's really interesting how they were able to adapt it for TV and how they adapted it specifically for Western audiences.
So let me ask you this. If someone went to you and said, like, hey, I'm interested in this, but I don't really want to read the book, would you recommend them watch this show?
I would recommend them go listen to the audiobook then, personally.
Okay, but like even they say, like, hey, I don't like the audiobooks. Could I watch the show and understand what's going on?
Oh, you can understand it because they dumb everything. They dumb all the science down.
And the thing is, I don't think the science in the book is that complicated. I think they explain it well enough in the book where a basic...
Yes. Well, basic understanding of science. The books, though, is they'll have big sections of explanation dump. And that's where it could bog down someone who just kind of wants to skim over a lot of science.
Okay, so one of the things I would compare this to would be like Ready Player One, right?
Okay.
That book, it goes into a whole different like lifestyle humanity using the technology there.
Mm-hmm.
And the movie cuts a lot of that stuff out, but gets to the same kind of end point. But I would say, yeah, the book's way better because it deals with other things going on in humanity.
Yep. You can fit everything in a book into a movie. But I think you can if you do a mini series because you have longer runtime to show more.
But I feel like this, in comparison to what I've read so far in the book, is like, all right, it's still giving me the same thoughts and the same emotions I got from the book. Where I would say, like, Ready Player One, I felt like there's a lot of things missing, then they only focused on.
And they rearrange some stuff,
and
too.
And they only focus on, like, the most recognizable things, and they change things to be more recognizable to the masses versus the niche stuff, which was kind of the whole point of it being for a niche crowd.
Yes.
Where I feel like this is, yeah, they've done things and they changed it so Western audiences or people could understand it more, but they still hit the points of, wow, this is really weird. What the hell is going on? Holy shit, this is... we're screwed to the very last point of, like... Are we really screwed? No, look, we can't even get rid of bugs. They only call us bugs because the guy referred to their enemies as pests.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't even understand what they meant when they kind of said, you are bugs, to the fullest extent. To where Clarence explains it as, look, the insects and bugs are all over the place. We can't get rid of them. If we're bugs to them... they're not going to be able to get rid of us. And it comes back to their own saying of, if one of us survives, we all survive.
Right.
So kind of leaves that like a hopeful point, but then you're still like, what the fuck is Wallfacer? Well, how is this a plan?
Yeah. That's all in the second book.
Yeah.
So
I think it's a very entertaining series and you should definitely watch it. I hope they get more to show on this. Definitely the books are going to be more entertaining and more detailed.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, like, Game of Thrones, the first few seasons is a good substitute for reading the books. I think this is a good substitute for reading these books if you don't want to read three books. But this is obviously an unfinished series. They have to continue. If it ended here, it'd be like, this is a good, like, teaser. Now go read the books.
Right.
To figure out what actually happens.
Yeah. And understand that... five people are actually one person, pretty much.
One to two people throughout the books. So definitely check it out. Three Body Problem. We really enjoyed it. The books, obviously, we encourage you to read those or listen to audiobooks. They're available on Audible as well, which is what I usually use for audiobooks. What I listened to so far is really good. It's really interesting. So definitely I suggest listening to the books or reading them yourselves. And this, you know, if you're unsure, this is a good teaser to be like, watch this first season of Three Body Problem.
Watch up till episode 5.
If you're really interested, then go grab the books and finish it.
Yeah.
Because whether or not they finish this, who knows? And if they do get to finish the story, do they stick the landing? We have no idea.
Yeah.
And these guys have been known not to stick the landing, so we'll see. But yeah. But at least this time they have a full story to adapt and not like have to figure out the ending for themselves. All right, so moving on. New movie came out this week, Godzilla X Kong, The New Empire.
Yes.
Honestly, I think I've been calling it Kong X Godzilla because this is a King Kong movie. It's not a Godzilla movie.
Yeah. Godzilla is just kind of there for filler.
Like, Godzilla is doing his own thing where, like, Godzilla versus Kong was a Godzilla movie because mm-hmm. they were focused on, like, what the fuck is Godzilla doing? This movie is, what's Kong doing this whole time? Yes. Why is Kong doing stuff? Oh, look, Godzilla's reacting to something. We don't know what, but Godzilla looks like
he's charging.
He's preparing for something.
What's he doing?
But the movie is mostly about Kong. So this falls into, for me, like a King Kong movie, where I'm more of a Godzilla fan.
Same.
Godzilla definitely does a good appearance here. The other thing I would have to say is, like, we were going to talk about after the movie, like, how many pages was the script? Because the majority of this movie is just
monsters yelling and grunting.
Yeah, it's just monkeys talking to each other and then monsters fighting.
The human talking parts probably only, I would say, maybe 15 to 20 pages of dialogue, and that's it for this whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, for people who are like, Max. Like, these movies are too much people. I want more monster fighting. This had more.
This has monster fighting. You got Godzilla fighting a monster underwater. So yeah, that's Godzilla new. That's fighting cool.
A monster in Rome, and then he curls up in the Colosseum like it's a little bed. Like it's cat bed.
It is his cat bed. He's adorable, and you leave my baby boy alone.
Like, I also wanted, I almost wanted to see that. Okay, Godzilla sleeping in the Colosseum. I wanted it to kind of be like, okay, human beings are going to like start scraping his fingernails and like keying things and testing it, and then also he wakes up like, ew, bugs.
Ew, bugs. You just go, ew.
Yeah. It's real funny because also by the end of the movie, Godzilla goes back to his Colosseum and lays down in it. Like, yeah, okay, so this is his new
cat bed.
It's real funny because, like, at the end, what you see there when he lays down, they have scaffolding trying to fix what he destroyed before, right. And he knocks that all down while he goes, he lays back down inside it. It is definitely funny to see that. Because also, yeah, the people part here doesn't matter. It's all about what Kong's doing. And
yeah.
Then we get a big existential or exposition dump at the end.
Yeah.
Of what the story is. They literally like, hey, look, these tigers. And they explain everything that's happening. It's and then perfect. We get to watch a big monster fight.
Which is wonderful.
Yeah. It was very interesting that all that.
It's such a stupid movie, but I love it.
The one good thing is, like, the one thing I was afraid of that they might do is, like, are they going to tie Monarch's TV show into it? Because Monarch ends with, like, almost a teaser trailer for this movie. But they don't do it, which is good, because Monarch is only available on one streaming service, so it's a very limited number of people who've actually seen it. So I like that Monarch's TV show is still part of this universe, but they're not crossing the streams there to where it's like, oh, here's stuff for people to watch a TV show. It's like, you know, very small group of people who watch Apple TV shows. Dude.
Yeah. We're one of them.
Yeah. If you have access to Apple, you get a free, like, 1 week trial to it. Watch Monarch. That's one of the shows you need to watch
So wonderful.
But if you like the Godzilla universe and you wanted more monsters fighting monsters, this definitely gives you that.
It gives you a lot of monster fight monster.
Yeah.
And also, when Godzilla meets the little ape, it reminded me of Kratos and
Or Kong and Kratos.
Kong
and the little ape.
And the little ape. Yeah, that's why I said Kong and... you messed me up. It reminded me of Kratos and his son, who's Loki. Atreus.
Yeah, from God of War.
From God of War.
It didn't really look like, it like he was like...
Because you're like, all right, here's Kong, because he kind of has like a longer... He's old. He has a beard. And then you have this young, spry, red... ape, which, you know, is like the son's bitch's boy's hair color. That was so much like that. I'm like,
you could feel Kong saying boy.
100%. It was funny. So if you go in watching it, go in at the mindset that Kong is Kratos.
Yeah.
And the little orange ape is Atreus.
Yeah, definitely.
That was funny.
It was definitely a fun action movie.
It's fun. It's a turn your brain off.
Yeah, I mean, I can't say that. I won't say it was bad. I had a great time watching it.
Yeah. If you like these monarch if you like the movies,
the Monarch universe of monsters, they've done a good job with this stuff, and it's going to where you expect Godzilla's movies to go, more monsters fighting monsters.
Yeah.
And they've answered what people have complained about. There's less people in this and more just monsters fighting monsters.
There's so few people in this. Like, even in they meet up with the tribe, none of the tribe's people talk. And I'm like, oh, they're saving money
here. Oh, yeah. None of those people have to really be credited because they don't have lines.
Yeah, they just stand there and look and vote with eyes.
Because it's funny, like, they realize that they can speak telepathically to the little girl who could speak to the Kong.
And they're like, oh, they just speak telepathically. It's fine.
We never hear what they're saying whatsoever.
The girl will sign language back to.
And all she really said was I can feel their thoughts. She didn't say, like, I can hear their thoughts. And then they just make some sign language stuff to people, like, oh, I understand what you're saying. We'll do this. And it's like, okay, cool. Whatever. Monsters fighting monsters. It was great.
It's wonderful. And also, can I say the spoiler?
Yeah.
Mothra comes back. My baby girl Mothra's back. She's so pretty. And she floats around. And she tells Kong and Godzilla, hey, fuckers, get along and get back to your job of fighting this other ape. It's wonderful. She's beautiful. She fixes shit.
It is definitely a fun movie, I would say. Love her. But if you're going to catalog, like, here's the Godzilla movies, this is the Kong movie. And Godzilla versus Kong is a Godzilla movie.
Yes.
Where they go from here, who knows? I mean, from this point, they just get ridiculous with, like, the Transformers thing. It doesn't matter. Like, there's no more story to tell.
Yeah.
Like, they've established what everybody's roles are. Godzilla is the protector of Earth, and King Kong is the protector of the Hollow Earth. All they can do now is bring another Ghidorah from space or some shit.
Ghidorah from space.
I mean, they've kind of covered the whole mythos. At this point, I'm like, all right, we're done.
Yeah,
it's you haven't changed anybody's roles.
With King of Monsters. Yeah, it was pretty much done with King of Monsters. Or if you even want to push it, Kong versus Godzilla. It was kind of over. This is just like a big money grab. But it's my fun big money grab.
Yeah, I mean,
it's my dumb series I love to watch.
It's like the Fast and Furious movies I like to watch. They're really stupid, but they're fun to watch.
Yeah. So you have your Fast and Furious. I have my Godzilla.
I definitely say go watch it in the theater. Godzilla movies are always great to see on the big screen.
Pretty, pretty, pretty.
The special effects are done really well, and you're not going to have to listen to people talk that much until they explain the story at the end.
Yep. So you don't get much people, so if you don't like people stories, you'll like this movie.
Okay. Now, the last thing we'll talk about in gaming is more Dragon's Dogma 2.
Yes.
Basically, talk about the ending of it. I played it, and some other people have noticed it too, and there's actually one, I think, IGN video on it, but, like, the guy doesn't know what the reveal was. And then when I watched other people talk about their experience with the game, they hadn't gotten to the end game yet, so they didn't know about it either. But here's the big spoiler, all right? The game, when you start it up, it says Dragon's Dogma. The title card is Dragon's Dogma. And if you play Dragon's Dogma 1, like I had, and going into this game, I knew, like, okay, the political intrigue story of, like, this false arisen, all that stuff, that's a mess story. The whole point of Dragon's Dogma is this concept of you're picked by the dragon to kill the dragon. You're tasked to either kill the dragon or make a deal with the dragon, or the dragon kills you. And then if you kill the dragon, you have the option, at least in the first game, you basically meet God, and God says, okay, you need to take my place here and watch over the world. And the option in the first game was fight God. If you accept his role and you take over, or you fight God, and if he kicks your ass, you get cast down to the world and you turn into the dragon.
And you start the cycle again.
You start the cycle as the dragon. Or you defeat God, and you take his seat or whatnot, or you kill yourself and end the cycle. And that game ends with this weird concept of, like, you kill yourself, you fall back to Earth, and then your pawn has now possessed your body, and your pawn is in your body instead. And then when you go play New Game Plus, if you beat the whole game again, you find yourself being the God character and not the one that was there. In this game, knowing that much, I knew, like, okay, so this whole point of the game is going to be this cycle thing again. Like, I need to kill the dragon and then figure out what happens there, right? And you meet other Arisen throughout the game that kind of say, hey, I used to be an Arisen. I failed to defeat my dragon.
Okay.
Because like one of the masters actually tells you that, like, oh, he was an Arisen, but I failed to defeat my dragon, so now I'm just a drunkard hanging out at the hot springs.
Awesome. A great place to hang out.
Yeah. So what happens at the end of the game, though, is you play it, you get to the end, you fight the dragon, you're given the same choice that was in the first game, which is like, apparently, like, whoever you have the most, the highest affinity with, or character you bonded the most with, the dragon will have them and say, like, give me this person's life, and then you go off and become the ruler, and I'll leave you alone. And that was what the ruler of the kingdom did in the first game. Like, he sacrificed somebody, became immortal, and just ruled the kingdom. Mm-hmm. If you choose to do that, you leave, and that's called the bad ending. Where you get the throne, and you just let the dragon kill somebody, and, like, they go dormant until they pick a different Arisen.
Ah.
Or you take the good ending, which is you fight the dragon.
Fight the dragon, fight God.
Well, no, the good ending is you fight the dragon, you kill the dragon, you become king of the country, and you sit in your throne, credits roll, good ending.
Okay.
Cycle will continue, world will go on. The true ending is you fight the dragon at least once, but you notice the ghostly figure from the beginning of the game is sitting at the side table, and you go talk to him, he's like, why are you talking to me? Leave me alone. Like, sit down and take your throne. Then you go talk to him again. He's like, why are you persisting on this? Go sit down, take your throne. Or are you really sure you want to do this? And then he gives you the option of, like, fine, I'll let you try one more time. And then he warps you back to where you're riding on the dragon about to fight him again. Because the dragon, like, goes on a diatribe about you ending the cycle and all this as he flies you to the final battlefield. But at that point, you need to crawl on him, and then you have to use the God's Bane, which is the weapon you got that was in the first game, and you kill yourself with it while you're, like, on the dragon's heart. That ends the cycle. You both fall into the ocean where the brine takes over, and then the ghost shows up, tries to get you to go back to the regular world and become the ruler again, and your character, like, wipes that away. And then, boom, you see, like, an apocalyptic world. And then Dragon's Dogma 2 title card finally plays. So, which I thought was really cool, is that, like, you play through Dragon's Dogma. It's called Dragon's Dogma because that's what the original game was supposed to be. Dragon's Dogma 2 is what the end game is.
Ah.
Which is kind of a smart thing where, like, they could have done something where, like, they make this just as long as the regular game, so another 40 hours of gameplay, which would have been too long. Nobody wants to play 40 hours of gameplay. Come to end of game, and they realize they got another 40 hours to play. People would get bored and would stop at that point. Unless, like, even if they made every creature in this other Dark World version, like, completely different, I don't think it would hold attention as much. Instead, it's maybe another 3 to 4 hours of gameplay.
Okay.
If you rush through it, probably, like, maybe 3 hours or less. Because you are put on a timer, unfortunately. You're told, hey, go explore this world. Do whatever the fuck you want. There's more quests here, more missions to do. But you have 12 days to do it.
Okay.
The end of 12 days, the game ends. And in that time, you have time to go and save the world best way you can. You can help evacuate the cities and all that and find other quests and whatnot. But by the end, you have to basically confront the dragon again and then end the cycle and free all the people from it. The world goes back to normal and the brine is no longer in the ocean.
Oh, okay.
And that's the big thing, is that, like, the brine prevents anybody from going anywhere. There's an old guy in one of the towns that if you talk to him, he keeps telling you about how there's a world on the other side, but every time he goes out, the brine keeps bringing him back. Mm. This basically frees the whole world up to free choice and instead of being a slave to fate. And then you get to play New Game Plus. It forces you to play New Game Plus. After that, you can't do New Game Plus. If you do the good ending or bad ending, it'll let you go New Game Plus or go back to your last save prior.
Oh,
to the end of the game and just explore the world as is. But if you do the true ending, it's like, all right, if you want to play, you're doing New Game Plus. That's all you can do.
Okay.
So I'm going through New Game Plus stuff now, which unfortunately doesn't feel like anything's more difficult. Mm. It's weird that I still have the God's Bane weapon in my inventory. It's not a weapon that you can actually equip to use. It's just a weapon that you have in your inventory that you have to use like an item when the time comes. So I don't know why I still have that. So some things might change by the end of this playthrough, but, I do like this bait and switch there. And, like, the things that people are complaining about this game, like the Dragon's Plague
and some of game mechanics there are like, the director said, these things are all intentional.
Mm-hmm.
Everything we did in the game was intentional. And even the title card is an intentional choice to have you play Dragon's Dogma and then see Dragon's Dogma 2. And then now after you beat the game on the true ending, now my title card on the loading screen is Dragon's Dogma 2.
Okay.
So it changes everything after you play it through, as long as you do the true ending, which, unless you play through, which I hope on the second playthrough I do all, like, all the side quest stuff, because there's an achievement called You Obtain the Dragon's Dogma, which I guess would explain everything that's supposed to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, unless you play the first game, you wouldn't know you have to kill yourself, because it doesn't tell you. Because even, like, doing it, it's like, Dragon doesn't, like, tell you you have to kill yourself. I'm like, okay, well, I have the God's Bane, and something's happening while I'm crawling on the dragon, my heart's beating louder and louder, and then it flashes. Okay, I should try and use this thing. I used it, and then, okay, it killed me. And then I got the true ending.
Uh-huh.
If people didn't play the first game and know that that's how the story goes, they wouldn't know to do that unless they've gotten, I would assume, the Dragon Dogma machine, which has the information that would tell you what you're supposed to be doing.
Mm-hmm.
Which, like I said, the game doesn't handhold you. Like, I cut myself off from a bunch of different quests in this when I got to the end game because I got there a little bit too quickly. I realized, oh, shit, I'm at the end. And, like, some quest lines just disappeared off my quest board.
Oh.
I could pick up new ones. But, like, I had to go, like, I just had to explore the world and stop doing main quest stuff.
Right.
So, again, a very good game. It's about, to beat the game, about 40 to 45 hours.
It's not
bad. That's doing at least a good handful of some side stuff, all the main quest stuff, including hunting down and finding the Sphinx and completing the Sphinx quest. That's completely optional. You don't have to do it. But it's something that you should definitely do. Especially if you experience Dragon's Plague, because it's the solution to the Dragon's Plague problem, but you only have a limited amount of time to solve that issue because bodies end up in the morgue, and then after a while they get buried. As soon as somebody gets buried, you can't resurrect them anymore.
Ew.
And the Sphinx has a way for you to solve the issue that happens with Dragon's Plague. So, Game of the Year, yes, I think definitely possible. Will it be remembered for that? Who knows? It's still definitely a great adventure game to where, like, you can literally turn off your quest marker and, like, all right, I'm just going to go explore.
Nice.
And you'll find stuff to do. And there's always something around every corner, which a lot of open world games don't have. There's a lot of empty fucking space, which is what's been really annoying about open world games.
Yes.
Either they're littered with too much stuff to do that's marked on your map and you don't know what to do, and you're kind of just, like, too flooded with too much information, or it's like, all right, cool, there's nothing on the map. But there actually is nothing in the world for me to do either, other than spend 15 minutes running from one end to the other.
Yeah. A Shadow of Colossus type situation.
Somewhat like that, where I would say, like, Assassin's Creed has, like, too much stuff on there. I feel like Witcher 3 had too much stuff everywhere
mm-hmm.
for me to know, like, all right, should I just stay on the main story quest and I'll see what's going on there?
Yeah.
Because usually you stay on the main story quest line, you usually end up, like, getting pointed to different areas, but it's very clear that some games will do that. Other games are like, all right, well, we're not going to show you everything. You have to go find that if you want.
Yeah.
But with having so many map markers, you're like, you're overwhelmed. I'd rather not be overwhelmed and be able to explore and just find new things as I go.
Mm-hmm.
That's more fun to do. But like as other people have said, people have started playing games now just to beat them as fast as possible, where this is a game that you need to go and just have fun with it and take your time playing it.
Yeah. Experiment, explore.
Yeah, because, like, things happen, and they're fun. It's fun to watch. The most emergent thing is probably the griffins, is how the system works. The griffins will just show up whenever.
Yeah.
There are definitely specific areas where I think, like, where Cyclops appear, or mm-hmm. Troll will appear. They'll always respawn in these specific areas, or path lines along the main road. But can a griffin just suddenly appear in the middle of that fight? Absolutely. They're just flying around all over the place. So they'll just be like, I saw one flying when I was by the front of the town. I'm like, all right, it's flying. Oh, shit, it's turning. Fuck, it's coming out this way. And they're like, I have to fight this griffin at the front door of a town to prevent it from, like, killing a bunch of NPCs. I'm like, well, it's here, and it's not going to fucking leave, so we got to go fight this thing.
Right.
But definitely good game. I think good game. I think it's definitely Game of the Year contender. I think this is really good. Banishers so far is really good. These are definitely good games to check out. This is definitely worth the full price. Don't worry about the microtransactions. They're garbage and they're not needed. But again, I think
you can easily ignore them.
And again, I think the people freaking out about it and telling you to boycott the game because of it, I guarantee you they all have fucking Resident Evil 4. And the Resident Evil 4 has has fucking pay-to-win microtransactions in that.
Mm-hmm. Assassin's Creed has pay-to-win
microtransactions. I mean, like, the main thing is, like, all the Resident Evil games are Capcom games just like this.
Mm-hmm.
They all have those fucking microtransactions in it. You guys had your time to had your chance to bitch about that back then, but no, you didn't. You try to put Resident Evil 4 Remake as a Game of the Year contender, and it's like, it's a fucking remake. It shouldn't be a Game of the Year, period, dude. It's not a new game.
Yeah.
But nobody complained about those microtransactions. And that's like, here, have this gun early so you're more powerful than anything else in the game. Like, this has microtransactions that don't affect the game by any means other than giving you in-game currency that you can easily earn just by playing it. So, definitely a good game. Buy it, pick it up. I suggest get the deluxe edition if you're a fan. Getting the regular one's fine as well. There's nothing too major in the deluxe edition to have, but it's they earned the money, I think, for the $70 base game and like the $80 like deluxe edition. It's worth it.
Okay. All
right. That is our show this week. So next week we'll be back with more Shogun. Be talking about some other stuff that we'll figure out what we're watching. I don't know what we need to catch up on. I think
we still need to catch up on the regime.
Yeah, the regime still got to catch up. We have Invincible to catch up on.
Yes.
Because I know that started a few weeks ago and we never picked that back up. So I'll have some stuff to talk about next week. Catch us then. And if you have any suggestions of stuff, shows you want us to watch or movies to check out, let us know. We'll talk about that. You can catch our podcast and our reviews and stuff on our webpage at nerdcrusade.com, our YouTube page, The Nerd Crusade. Check that out as well. And I do Twitch the gameplay of what I'm doing and on Twitch at twitch.tv/nerdcrusade. Mm-hmm. Come check us out. Leave comments and let us know what you think. And we'll see you next time.
Bye.